a culture war going on in this country, we can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in His place, back where He belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So, how do we do that? How do we enter into the conversations of the day in a way that honors Jesus? How do we serve as His ambassadors, speaking the very mind of Christ on the matters of the day? Well, there may not be any easier day, and yet maybe any more difficult day than today. Today is the day when literally tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of folks are in Washington, D.C. participating in the March for Life. So what does that mean? What is our concept of life? What does pro-life encompass? How big is that? Who does that include? What am I marching about? Who am I standing for? Why do I stand up for life? Why do I seek to give voice to those who don't have a voice of their own to raise, or who don't have the kind of voice or the platform that I have in which they can make a lot of noise about issues about which God would be very concerned? So we're going to be talking today with some folks who are at the March for Life. But before we turn our attention directly to what's happening there in Washington, I want to lift up to you an article that appears. It actually appears across lots of different platforms today. I pulled it from the BBC.com. And this is international news that is related to life. And what I'm trying to demonstrate for you here, it really doesn't matter where you are, and it really doesn't matter whether or not you are able to go and participate yourself in a March for Life. You can be a pro-life advocate wherever you are, because you can be a person who's well-informed about the issues of the day, and you can bring God's pro-life perspective to bear no matter where you are, and no matter who you're with. So if you happen to be in an environment where talking about science is, frankly, an easier conversation to have, maybe you're on a college campus, maybe you are in Silicon Valley, maybe you are somewhere that people who are thought of as pro-life tend to be thought of as a little wacky. And so you need to be able to approach these conversations with intelligence, imagination, and love. And so sometimes science gives us very strange gifts in this direction. Technology often gives us these gifts. So the ultrasound is a good example of a gift that technology has given to the pro-life movement. But this story is about human embryos being incubated in pigs. So this is the article is human-pig chimera embryo, and then there's a detail about that. So the articles that are out there have paragraphs or sentences like this. Embryos that are less than 0.001% human and the rest pig have been made and analyzed by scientists. Now, from a pro-life standpoint, from a person who believes that the Bible is the Word of God, a person who believes that God has created us in His image, and that we are uniquely thus human and people, we have to ask this question. At what percent does a human become human? So they're saying here, well, it's not really a human embryo because it's only 0.001% human and the rest pig. And I say to you, okay, at what percent is a human human? Is there going to be a point in time where they're going to reach a certain percentage and they're going to say, oh, that's now a human and not a pig. Oh, that's a pig with some human parts. Do you see how crazy this conversation very, very quickly becomes? Okay, this question has a very different answer from an evolutionary versus a biblical worldview. Here's another sentence. It is the first proof chimeras, named after the mythical lion, goat, serpent monster, can be made by combining material from humans and animals. Well, let's just think about that sentence for just a second. Chimera is no longer a mythical thing. There are now human-animal hybrids. There are chimera. And just because we can do it, because it says they can be made by combining material from humans and animals, just because we can do it, that's one question. Should we? So just because technology has arrived at the place that we can do something, should we? There's a difference there between knowledge and wisdom. That's a great conversation you could have with people. The difference between knowledge and wisdom. Vastly different arenas of conversation. Here's another paragraph. The experiment, described Thursday in the journal Cell, C-E-L-L, involves injecting human stem cells into the embryo of a pig, then implanting the embryo in the uterus of a sow and allowing it to grow. After 4 weeks, the stem cells had developed into the precursors of various human tissues, including the heart, liver, and neurons. A small fraction of the developing pig was made up of human cells. Again, there is a paragraph that could lead to a very robust conversation with a person who is interested in science, is interested in medicine, is interested in technology, is interested in chemistry, and maybe could be moved to be interested in human life. Among all of the problems that we could discuss here, one that I have not heard others raise, and by the way, this article is being widely discussed among those folks out there who think about and write about and are concerned about pro-life issues. Among all of the problems that could be discussed here, one that I have not heard others raising is this, the particular issue of the pig. The pig is likely to be particularly offensive to Muslims who consume only halal meat and Jews who eat only that which is kosher. The consumption of pork is forbidden by both. So if taking pork into the body as food is forbidden, certainly the cultivation of human organs in a pig that are mostly pig and only 0.001% human, designed then to be transplanted into the human body, would be utterly anathema. All right, so the article ends thus. The human-pig hybrid was highly inefficient, the researchers cautioned, but it's the most successful human-animal chimera and a significant step toward the development of animal embryos with functioning human organs. All right, friends, I don't think this is hard for you to dissect from a biblical worldview. I also don't think that this is a challenging, it's not challenging to introduce this in conversation because these are the conversations of the day. What's happening today in D.C. is relevant to the headlines, and what's happening in the headlines is what the March for Life is all about in D.C. today. I've got some friends that are out there. I couldn't be there today, but I got some friends who are reporting to us from the street. So, Chelson, welcome to the Reconnect. Let us know what the March for Life is like this year.
Hey, Carmen. Thanks so much for having me. Full disclosure, though, I just got back to the office, so I am in the office now. But this morning, it was just incredible. I've been going to the march for the last 6 years. This is my sixth year. The largest crowd that I've ever been able to see. I don't know what the official numbers are, but everywhere I looked, there were people up on the monument. I couldn't even get out of the crowd to see to try and get a better view because there were just so many people. I will say it was all, for the most part, young people, largely Catholic. I was talking to the kids around me, largely from Catholic schools, but definitely more evangelicals there this year. I saw Anglicans for Life there this year. So we definitely had some mainline representation. A lot of Hispanic students were here this year, too. So fabulous. But again, just the largest crowd that I've seen since moving to the city.
And Chelson, tell us, you know, is it a mix of men and women? I know you've commented here on there's a lot of young folks there. Does everybody seem to sort of be sharing the same spirit? Is it a mix of people who agree and disagree? Just kind of give us a sense of what it feels like to be at a march.
Yeah, it's a great mix of men and women. Seems pretty split. Lots of young women, though, in my age bracket. So I'd say if we're looking at the millennial age group, it's going to be more women. But if we're looking at the older demographics, then it's probably a good mixture. The feeling was just camaraderie and unity today. It was just a feeling of excitement and being able to come together. At one point on the stage of the March for Life rally, there were Catholics and Orthodox cardinals and bishops together praying. It was a pretty amazing display of unity there. We were just I was just really in awe, again, of just the peacefulness around that many people. I mean, again, I don't know the numbers, but it was hundreds of thousands at the rally this morning, and there was no fighting, no bickering, no shoving, no pushing. Everyone was just in good spirit, very compassionate. I didn't even see any protesters. I saw one woman with her pink hat walking towards the march. Obviously, the pink hat representing last weekend's Women's March. But I didn't see a group of protesters there that she was joining. I never saw a large amount of protesters, which was good. So overall, very peaceful, very encouraging, very passionate, and very determined to be the pro-life generation.
Oh, Chelsea, thank you so much for participating. Thank you for marching. Thank you for calling in and sharing with us your experience.
Thank you, Carmen. Bye.
Yeah. Hey, folks, so one of the things that happened at the March for Life today is that the Vice President, Mike Pence, actually addressed the March for Life in person. So we've got a little audio from that. Let's listen to our Vice President.
More than 240 years ago, our founders wrote words that have echoed through the ages. They declared these truths to be self-evident, that we are, all of us, endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and then among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. 44 years ago, our Supreme Court turned away from the first of these timeless ideals. But today, three generations hence, because of all of you and the many thousands who stand with us in marches like this all across the nation, life is winning again in America.
Life is winning again in America. Mike Pence, I mean, I'm telling you, it was a passionate speech. You can go to YouTube. You can watch the whole thing. I'm sure that everybody is going to be covering it widely. But from this particular segment, one of the things that he talks about is the self-evidentiary nature of truth. And I think that when we have conversations in our culture about whether or not facts are facts, whether or not reality is reality, whether or not reality is virtual, whether or not we can each have our own reality and our own set of facts related to that, it is very, very helpful to return to language like this. Like, we do recognize that there are truths that are self-evident, and that one of those self-evident truths is that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. So when you find yourself you find yourself questioning what people around you are even talking about and how upside down things are and how confusing things have become, I want you to return to some basic language and some basic understanding like this, that there are truths that are self-evident, that we are endowed. Every single one of us, every single human being is endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And the first among those that our founders articulated is life. Mike Pence also referred to the Supreme Court. He actually talked about this at length during his remarks today. And I believe we can be looking forward to the president nominating a Supreme Court justice within the next week sometime. Some people are saying that it will be as late as next Thursday. Others are saying it may be earlier than that. What the vice president said is, you know, we can certainly be assured that that Supreme Court justice nominee is going to be a person who upholds life. Hey, it looks like we've got another caller from the March for Life. Joy, are you at the march?
I am. Well, I left. I'm back at my hotel room here working, but I wanted to, just for a couple of minutes, talk about how energized I am from the march. You know, I had the chance to attend the rally before the march, and, you know, there were some key speakers on the platform. You know, obviously Jeannie Mancini, you know, the organizer of the march, but then you had Kellyanne Conway and Mike Pence. And unfortunately, that's all I was able to hear. I was especially glad to hear Mike Pence not only say things like, we do have certain unalienable rights, from our maker, but he also encouraged the March for Life crowd to show compassion and not anger for those who oppose us. And I think it's a refreshing rhetoric to hear from the right, who are so often mischaracterized and misunderstood in this movement.
Yeah, he was very encouraging for people to be passionate, for people, and yet for people to become passionate. I appreciated the balance of those ideas.
Absolutely. But, even more than that, I was hopeful about the next generation of pro-lifers. And I'll give you two reasons why. The first reason is that, there were so many millennials. It seemed everywhere I looked, it seemed as though they outnumbered all the other ages, at least from where I stood along Constitution Avenue. So many young adult faces and so many happy young warriors who seemed enthusiastically ready to speak for those who can't speak for themselves. Another reason I left energized is that I got the sense from the marchers that it wasn't just about abortion. There seems to be a growing awareness that to be pro-life means to be more than just against abortion. It means to advocate for the least of these, the elderly, the poor, the disabled, the refugee, and on and on. And so I saw so many signs and heard some chatter and conversations and even some chants that gave me the impression that this next generation of pro-lifers are more than just the unborn, which are very important. God values the unborn the same way he values the refugee and the elderly person in the nursing home who never received a visit. And so I think that's catching on, and I'm really encouraged about it.
Hey, I really appreciate your observation on that particular subject. That is certainly something that, our friends at Evangelicals for Life, that conference is going on yesterday and today. Again, let me remind listeners, you can actually go and participate in that and watch that streaming at evangelicals.life. But that's basically what that entire conversation is about. It's this much wider conversation that, yes, absolutely still includes advocacy for the preborn, but recognizing that that life and God's pro-life agenda is an agenda for all life and every life. And so I do think that we hear a lot more conversation about foster care, about adoption, about elder care, about people who are missing from the conversation because they don't have the opportunity to have a voice. And so I wholeheartedly appreciate the justice nature and the pro-justice nature of the pro-life conversation as we move forward. Hey, Joy, thank you so much for calling in. Thank you for being there to stand and to march. And thank you for advancing the kingdom in this way. We appreciate you calling us today.
Thank you, Carmen.
All right, friends, we are talking about the March for Life. If you are listening and you are there and you want to call in, I am more than happy to talk with you. I'd love to hear from you what your perspective is, what your experience is. The number here is 877-655-6755. You can also text me on that number. Or if Facebook or Twitter are easier ways for you to communicate, we are on all of those social media platforms as well. On Twitter, I am at Carmen LaBurge. Hey, a quick shout out. Erin Brownback, who was on the show, we asked her because we knew she was going to be there, and we said, hey, send us some woman on the street kind of reporting. And so she actually did a little live video on Twitter. It's not a Facebook Live, right? It's something else. It's a little live thing you do on Twitter. Anyway, and it's a little video. It's a little shout out to us at the Reconnect. And so we appreciated that. And I just encourage you to whatever social media platform you happen to be on, whatever way you have of sharing the good news of your life, the life that God has given you, and to advocate for the goodness of life that God intends for everyone, right? So Jesus came that we might have life, abundant life, the good life. And you and I both know that the good life is the life that is found in a restored relationship with God. And so that's really what we're talking about. Russell Moore likes to say it's the reborn for the preborn. That's part of the pro-life agenda, right? That we need to be, those of us who are reborn in Christ, need to be using our voices and our platforms to advocate for the preborn. And then we also need to advocate for those that are born, right? And so we are talking about that. I've got a blog posted today at reconnectwithcarmen.com about the subject of this comprehensive nature of the pro-life movement and the pro-life agenda. So encourage you to engage in the conversation in whatever way you can, whatever platform God has given you. So we have had Chelsea Patterson here on the show, and one of the things that Chelsea talked about when she was on the show was her own adoption, and I didn't even know that that was a part of her story. She actually advocates for adoption and foster care policy for the U.S. House of Representatives. She's currently working on a book, and so she posted this incredible incredible post, and again, her name is Chelsea Patterson, and this is at the Gospel Coalition blog, and it says, "Today is my birthday because my mom chose life." And she talks about her birthday being a bittersweet day. And here's what she says. "I was born out of wedlock to a poor teenager in Eastern Europe. The terrified young woman who gave me life is my hero. She made a courageous choice to be my mother, even if it meant she could only remain in the role for a few days. The only tie that she will ever have to me is her blood and her genes. Another woman, equally heroic, stepped into my life, willingly became my mother, and made me her permanent daughter. Both women loved me. Both made choices that will affect my life forever." And then her walk-off paragraph at the end, "As thousands gather in the National Mall in Washington, D.C. today, I will remember the courageous woman who made it possible for me to celebrate my birthday today. I want to use my voice to advocate and speak up for those who don't have one. And I hope you, too, will leverage your words and actions to be a beacon of hope and healing to a hurting world." So a little shout out there to Chelsea Patterson. Happy birthday. And a shout out to her mom. Right. It is a privilege to be a woman. And it's a privilege to be a woman who has the opportunity to give life to others. And whether or not you have biological children, you and I have the opportunity to be voices of life and advocates of life. If we do nothing else with our life, then advocate for life, we have done a good thing. We have honored God in our living. You know, God alone is the one who is in the position and has the power to grant life. I mean, we've talked about what these scientists are able to do. They can manipulate the material. They can take materials that already exist, that God has created, and they can manipulate those materials. And just because they can doesn't mean they should. And that is certainly a bioethics conversation that we should be having, right? The church, Christians, should be out on the forefront of bioethical conversations. We shouldn't be bringing up the rear saying, "What? What? There's people out there making human pig combos?" Like, right? We should not, that shouldn't catch us off guard. We should be people that are out in front of the conversations about should we. We should be the people who are prepared to have the conversations about should we. Because technology and science and evolutionary thought is going to continue to press forward on the can we front. They will constantly be pressing the can we forward, and they won't be asking the should we question. Because it's those with a religious worldview, frankly, who ask the should we questions in the world. And we need to be the people who are leading those ethical conversations. All right. We're going to go here to a break in just a moment. I would invite you to visit us online. We're at reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter. That's a great way to engage the conversation. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. All right, friends, this is The Reconnect. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Reconnect with your host, Carmen LaBerge. Now, back to Carmen.
Hey, friends, I'm Carmen LaBerge, and this is The Reconnect. We love having conversations with people who are engaged in the conversation today and doing so in a way that honors Jesus. So talking to people who today are at the March for Life in Washington, D.C., appreciate your calls. Again, the number here is 877-655-6755. Billy Hollowell is on the line. You might recognize his name because we have talked to him before. He is at faithwire.com. And let me just tell you, if you need a resource of a place to go to get the good, to get a little dose of good news every single day, that's what Billy's doing. Billy is doling out the good news on the internet at faithwire.com. So, hey, Billy, welcome back to the Reconnect. Tell us what you're experiencing there in D.C.
Well, you might hear a lot of noise. I am actually right now in front of the Supreme Court, and I'm here, you know, covering the event for faithwire.com, and we decided, you know, I'm just going to get in the middle of it. So I've been kind of walking with people and interviewing people and hearing what they have to say, but we've just right now reached the Supreme Court, and I have to say the crowds are huge. I mean, not to borrow from Trump, but they're completely huge. I mean, I have not seen a march in person that has been this big, and I don't know what it compares to numbers-wise to the past, and it may be smaller than the Women's March last week. I don't know, but it's a very, very sizable group of people.
And tell us what some of the stories that you're hearing as you're talking with people. Why are they there? Why are they marching? What are they hoping to achieve? And don't worry about the noise in the background. We just love to hear it.
Well, I will tell you, I think the number one thing that surprised me is that the range in age. I mean, you're seeing a ton of kids, families, a lot of millennials. And that shouldn't be too surprising because when you dig into the numbers, millennials are actually pretty, you know, pretty pro-life. And they become more pro-life over time, ironically. So seeing a lot of that with just elderly, talking to the young. And I think that's really fascinating. And as you can hear right now, people are starting to sing. There's been a lot of singing, a lot of Ave Maria and lots of different songs, praise and worship songs throughout the march. And again, seeing old and young people join in together.
Oh, I love that. I love that that you're seeing a wide range of people and that they seem to be joyful and singing. Singing is a good sign. Are you getting a sense that there's sort of a comprehensive understanding of pro-life, particularly when I think about millennials? You know, they love to be justice-oriented and change-oriented about things. So when you when you're talking with people, are they exclusively thinking that pro-life is for the pre-born, or is it a more comprehensive understanding than that?
It's definitely more comprehensive. I've heard a number of times that life, you know, defending life isn't just for the unborn. It's from life to natural death. And you know, a lot of people comprehending and understanding that. And even a lot of young people understanding that. So I think that's been really encouraging and interesting to see. And you know, I've interviewed a lot of people in the last couple of weeks about this topic. And one of the big things that you'll hear is, look, we can't just be pro-birth. We have to be pro-life. And, you know, helping teen moms after they have babies, you know, coming alongside them. You can't just tell people, hey, have babies. You've got to help after that. And so I think there's a good understanding of that here. And, in fact, even seeing some atheist groups, I interviewed a few atheists here who are pro-life atheists and explaining why they believe what they believe, which is very interesting. And I think they share a lot of views on life, interestingly and ironically, that Christians do. So there you go. I mean, it's been a really, really – and I'm actually, as we speak, I'm passing a pro-bikers for life sign. So you've even got the bikers at it. It's a very diverse group.
I love it. Hey, Billy, thanks so much for your on-the-street viewpoint, and we look forward to catching up with you at faithwire.com.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks. All right, friends, maybe you're out there. Maybe this is the first time you've ever marched. Maybe you are a person who, man, you've been doing this for 44 years and you're out there again. We'd love to hear from you. The number here in the studio is 877-655-6755. Maybe you've been watching it online. Maybe you are a person who you've engaged in the march in that particular way. Things that strike you, things that surprise you. I also recognize, because somebody just communicated a reminder to me, that today is not only the March for Life, today is also Holocaust Memorial Day. It's interesting to me that these two events coincide this year on the same day. So this is the day upon which we remember and we pledge to never forget the 6 million men, women, and children who were who were killed for the crime of being Jewish. And so when we talk about pro-life, and we talk about pro-life for all of life and for every life, we are talking about really comprehensive issues. And we are remembering today 60 million lives sacrificed here in the United States since the Supreme Court made abortion legal in all 50 states via the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973. So 60 million lives that we're remembering today. But we're also remembering today the 6 million lives lost in the Holocaust. I think we also have to be attuned to the fact that there are millions of people today around the globe who are struggling for life. And there are a lot more people around us struggling to make sense of life. So when we want to talk about being pro-life, we need to be talking about, thinking about, praying about, and working for comprehensive approaches to life. Hey, we've got Adele Banks on the line. Adele is a reporter with the Religion News Service. Adele, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your perspective on what's happening at the March for Life.
Hi, Carmen. How are you today?
I'm well. Tell us where you are, what you're experiencing, maybe what's surprised you. What's going on there?
Well, I'm back in the warmth of my office after being out in the cold of the march today. But I just got back from it, and there were lots of people there, lots of seemingly happy, cheery, really buoyant people there. And what was most surprising was how much of a representation there was from the new administration at the march. Both Vice President Mike Pence spoke and Kellyanne Conway, which is very unusual for that kind of march. I remember years ago that second President Bush, I think, addressed by maybe by phone, that kind of thing. But for them to actually be standing there in front of the cheering crowds was a significant thing for the people who are supportive of this movement.
And were you close enough, you know, to hear what they said? And if so, can you give us a sense of what the crowd response to what they said was?
Yes. Vice President Pence talked about what was going to happen and what has happened already in relation to the abortion issue at the White House, including the decisions related to funding of those that provide abortion services. That was one of the first acts of the president to try to halt some of that. And also the plans to name, as soon as next week, a nominee for who he called the successor of the late and great Justice Scalia. All of that got lots and lots of cheers. And even just her introduction, Kellyanne Conway talked about who she was. She called herself a wife and a mother. Then she said she was Catholic, and that just caused, like, huge, huge outcry of support, and because the crowd is probably mostly Catholic. And then she also described herself as pro-life, and they love that, too.
And Adele, one of the things that I observe about the March for Life every year is the very high-profile way in which Catholics show up. I mean, it is... If Catholics kind of live under the radar for most evangelicals around the around 364 days of the year, man, this is a day upon which everybody recognizes there's a lot of Catholics in this country, and they're really passionate about about the issue of life. And so when I've been at the March for Life, one of the things that's always struck me is that, you know, all these schools, all these Catholic schools from all over the country, they come to the March for Life. And so there's this there's a youthfulness and an energy related to the next generation of pro-life Catholics. That's just always it's just always a pretty impressive demonstration. Did you see lots of young people out there today?
Yes, there were various knit caps of different colors, a whole bunch of ones that were yellow, some that were black and white. They were groups that were clearly trying to stay together somehow because in some cases they were pretty large. I talked to one 14-year-old who wants to see the end of legal abortion in her lifetime, and there were many, many young people who were very enthusiastic, jumping up and down to the music that preceded the speeches and joining everyone else in the march to the Supreme Court afterwards. So, yes, there's definitely a youthful as well as Catholic exuberance at the march every year, but there is an organization called Evangelicals for Life that's brought together by Focus on the Family and the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, and they had a meeting that started yesterday with, I believe, some 500 people registered. And so there is sort of a coming on board and more prominence of evangelicals at this event. I mean, when I went around and tried to interview people, I think I found one Southern Baptist, but most of the people were still Catholic. But there does seem to be a sort of a meeting of the minds on this, and a more public one.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been talking about the Evangelicals for Life event here on the show as well, so we appreciate you covering that. Appreciate what you do at the Religion News Service, and just to let folks know, you can find the Religion News Service online at religionnews.com. Adele, what can you give us a little hint, maybe what you're going to be writing about that we can be looking for?
Well, I'm working on a story right this minute that I need to turn in as soon as possible, and hopefully you'll hear and see much of what I just told you. So,
oh, fantastic! All right, well, we'll let you get back to that. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your eyewitness. Thanks. All right, friends, it's fun. It's fun to hear from folks who are there. Pretty much everybody has echoed one another. There seems to be a lot of energy. There's a lot of youthfulness in the crowd, but there's certainly a diversity of people, lots of generations there, and folks who are concerned about a wide variety of life issues and life concerns. And I would say that if you're a person for whom that is new information, let me invite you to go to reconnectwithcarmen.com. I posted a blog today really seeking to articulate the breadth or the comprehensive nature of the pro-life movement today. Yes, absolutely, the pro-life movement is still advocating for the preborn, right? Still advocating, against abortion might be one way of seeing that. Certainly the impetus of the pro-life movement was ignited 44 years ago at the passage of, when the Supreme Court ruled in the Roe v. Wade case, in favor of abortion being legalized in all 50 states. So certainly the March for Life centers on that issue. However, there is a growing awareness and a growing understanding that there are lots of social justice issues related to the pro-life agenda. And that if we're going to be pro-life, we have to be pro-life for all of life and for every life, from conception to natural death. And so some of the things that are spiking in the news now around the country are these proposals for, let's say, dying with dignity or the right to die. That's a pro-life issue. This conversation that that I lifted up just a few minutes ago about scientists making these chimeras, these human pig hybrids in the lab, that's a life issue. That's a pro-life issue. You start messing around with what it means to be human, and you start messing around with the dignity of the human being. Human trafficking is a life issue. Slavery is a life issue. Justice and injustice, and therefore incarceration and the death penalty, those are life issues. And so when we talk about education in this country, that's a life issue. When we talk about there being food deserts in the middle of our cities, that's a life issue. When we talk about people with disabilities and we talk about people who have challenges as they age because they're running out of money or they're being displaced for one reason or another, we talk about people with chronic chronic diseases or chronic conditions, and therefore they are not able to participate in society in all of the ways that we think people ought to be able to in order to be contributors to our culture. That's a life issue, because let me tell you, there are people on the other side of these conversations saying those lives are not worth preserving, those lives are not worth paying for, and we would be better off as a culture if we did away with all the non-contributors. Okay, so I got to tell you that you become non-contributory, you become a hurdle to someone else, you become bothersome, you become viewed as someone that's inconvenient and expensive. And there are people out there who are advocating that really you ought not be supported by us as a society. And so pro-life, the pro-life agenda, a pro-life theology, is a pro-God theology, because God is the creator of life, and God's pro-life, not just for this life, but for the life that is to come. And he's pro-life for every life, and he's pro-life for all of life. All right, so my my below the fold today, which is, you know, where I like to lift up stories that they may not be topping the news. So, you know, the March for Life is topping the news today, and everything that Donald Trump is doing is topping the news today. And other than that, I mean, you know, normally by this point we would be talking about the Super Bowl and the Academy Awards, but I got to tell you, there's so much news related to what's happening in the Trump presidency and through the Trump administration, that that frankly there's a greater interest in what's happening at the national level in our country than I have ever seen before. People seem enthusiastic to be talking about the prospects of positive progress. I mean, the Dow is sustained over 20,000, and people don't even have time to talk about it because there's so much else to talk about. I mean, in a different time, that would have been real news, and we would be talking about it. But, yeah, that's not even above the fold anymore. Okay, so let me talk about ultrasounds. That's kind of below the fold, by the way. So ultrasounds, the only reason, maybe not the only reason, that's not fair, a major contributor to the pro-life movement in America, and actually around the world, is the ability of the woman to actually see her baby. Because let me tell you, once you have seen it, the gig is up. There's no convincing a woman who has laid eyes on the baby that is inside of her, who is then able to say, that's not a baby. So she consciously knows what she's doing when she's having an abortion. That's a that becomes a conscious, informed decision. And so women's minds are changed by being able to see their baby and hear the baby's heartbeat. A change of mind takes place in many cases. And when that change of mind takes place, then those of us who are pro-life absolutely need to be prepared to help her then care for that child. There's no question about that. Okay, so no one is arguing for women to be encouraged to have babies that then no one's going to help them care for. So anytime that you hear that argued out there, I want you to say, now wait a second, that's not what the pro-life agenda is. This is not just a pro-birth agenda. This is a pro-life agenda. And so coming alongside women who do choose to have their babies and either raise them or give someone else the privilege who has not been able to have a child for one reason or another to be able to include that child in their family. What a gift that is. It's the greatest gift anyone could ever give. All right, so Matt K. Lewis is one of my probably favorite authors out there, a journalist out there. He's also an author. So he's posted a story called How Ultrasounds Inspired Abortion's Enemies. Okay, and he talks about, you know, the march. We got these pro-lifers, and then he says, "I think you've been helped by your cause by something that was invented in Scotland in 1956." And the article is about the ultrasound. In the 1950s, there was an obstetrician whose name was Ian Donald and an engineer named Tom Brown. They were in Glasgow, Scotland, and they invented what you and I know as the ultrasound. And they have won more converts to the pro-life movement probably than any protest ever has. So there are actually more people who are pro-life today in America as a percentage of the population than there were a decade ago. Now, that's in no small measure because not only do people have the opportunity to have ultrasounds, we have the opportunity through social media now, through technology, to actually share those images with each other. So I don't know if you've ever gotten informed that there's going to be a baby in your family or in your extended family or by one of your friends because they post a picture of their ultrasound. Well, again, that is a testimony to the fact that that's a baby. When you see it, you know that's a baby. And again, as I said earlier, once you've seen it, the gig is up. Now, one of the things that Matt Lewis talks about is how technology is often more important than ideology. We tend to adopt and adapt to new technologies without really thinking through what the ideological implications are. And the example that I want to give you, Matt doesn't bring this up, but he uses the pill as an example. I'm going to use IVF as an example. I am quite certain that not everyone out there who has taken advantage of IVF, which is in vitro fertilization, actually sat down and worked through all of the ethics, all of the pro-life ethics related to that technology. This, again, just because we can do it doesn't mean we should. Okay? In IVF, it is routine to produce a lot more fertilized eggs, embryos, human embryos, than will ever be implanted in that woman's womb and brought to life, brought to birth. And so if we are people who genuinely believe that life begins at conception, then what do we do with all of those manufactured human embryos? Now, I know a lot of Christians who have taken advantage of IVF technology who did not, in advance of that, work through the ethics of the should we. And then they have to make decisions about those babies who they are not going to bring to birth, not going to bring to this stage of life. So there's a lot of times that we as human beings and we as Christians let technology lead us places that our Christian ethics would not. It's not a condemnation of anybody that's had IVF. That's not what this is about. I have a beautiful, fantastic member of my family who was made in Arizona and not in the traditional way. So virtual reality for me might be the next thing on the horizon that I don't think Christians have thought through enough. We are likely to adopt virtual reality technologies, and we are likely to adapt our lives to them before and without thinking through all of the dangers related to it. How much are you willing to fake reality? How much fake reality, virtual reality, are you willing to give your time to and spend your money and your energy on? Is that a worthy use of your time, energy, talents, and resources? I know some folks who are already virtually lost in virtual reality. They might as well not be here. They're already so consumed in a world that is not really real. So there's danger there. And I don't think that we as Christians have thought through the life implications of living in alternate realities. Jesus Christ came to be incarnate in the real world. God created the real world, and this is where we're supposed to live. This is where we're supposed to move. This is where we're supposed to find our being. Right here in the real world, dealing with the real issues of life and death, dealing with real people and all their messiness, dealing with real kids. By the way, according to economists, this might be scaring people away from having babies, by the way. They estimate that it now costs $233,000 to raise a child in the United States. That's raising kids is costly. All right, but kids are not cheap. Okay, raising a kid might be costly, but that kid is not cheap. There's a lesson about the gospel in there. All right, the grace of God in Jesus Christ is free, my friends. It's free, but it's not cheap. It cost Jesus his life. There's a life issue for you to talk about today as well. Hey, I know that's all we got time for today. Visit us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Sign up to join us in the Kindness Challenge. Let us know what you're doing on Facebook or Twitter. Have a great day. Have a great weekend, and God bless.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.